another visitor. Stay a while. Stay forever.
Hi everyone, I'm Rob.
I'm a Rob as well.
And welcome to The Impossible Mission, the show where we try and talk about video games without pissing someone off.
In the case of this week, I think that's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, well, it's difficult every week.
Yeah, but if you are watching on YouTube, do click on the subscribe and the notification bell. Also comment when we are probably wrong. And you are probably right.
Or we're probably right and you're probably wrong.
Well, both sides are catered for there. Also, if you're listening to this on your podcast provider of choice, please do subscribe and share it with your friends. It means a great deal to us if you did that.
Yes.
But,
so,
yeah.
Today we're talking about the Xbox. And no, we're not talking about the history of the Xbox.
No, I mean, I have no concept of that.
I do, but we're not talking about that.
Because I'll be honest, my history of gaming was very all over the place. I was a Sega kid, and then Sega died. Then I was a PlayStation kid, not a Nintendo kid. I dabbled with Nintendo with the N64.
Traitor.
And then I went to PlayStation. I was never that faithful.
Neither were.
And I've been with PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, and PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4. Even saying it takes a long time, doesn't it?
I'm sorry. Just you know when the you know in those movies where the guy's walking out the room and the woman's still lying in bed saying don't leave me, imagine that was you with a console in the bed.
Okay, and then it doesn't show you that it just pans over to the window and yeah. The curtains for some hot gaming action. But try to climb out of that. I'm much more invested in this generation of upcoming consoles than I have been in a while. I mean, I think mainly the reason for that is because my way of describing it is I'm all PlayStationed out.
Yeah.
I think now is the perfect time to be PlayStationed out.
Well, it's a fair comment because PlayStation really hasn't changed how it's... I mean, Sony haven't really changed how they do things with the PlayStation for a while, whereas Microsoft seems to be trying to take a leaf out of Nintendo's book and innovating a little.
Well, not just that. I mean, after Don Matrick basically almost destroyed Microsoft and his always online and his £100 more than the PlayStation 4 with the Kinect.
See,
Microsoft effectively was screwed this generation.
See,
well, this previous Xbox One generation.
I'll be honest, you could kind of tell he couldn't be trusted with his name. I mean, he just sounds like a robot that's designed to take over the Earth. The Don Matrick.
You mean like the leader of EA, Android Wilson?
Yes.
Which is a Jimquisition joke I really like.
Yeah. But, I mean, Don Matrick, all you need is the in the beginning.
Yeah.
And he could be like a washing machine.
Yes, he could. But I think the time... with their new leader of, not leader, that makes it sound like a cult, with the new head of the president or the executive president, I can't remember his specific job title, of Microsoft and Xbox, Phil Spencer.
Yeah, Phil Spencer.
Phil Spencer's bloody good at his job.
He's been doing some really interesting things. I had the opportunity to actually see HoloLens in action, and that was a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be, and a lot better than I thought it was going to be. They're very expensive.
I mean, just looking at the process of how they're doing things now, the announcement, the way the Xbox has been announced.
Yeah.
I've got to say it this way, there's no other way to say it, but at this point in time, they have basically solidly kicked Sony right in the...
Yeah.
Because Sony have been sitting on their hands, and they've not done a thing, and Microsoft, I don't think there's much left for them to really announce except the much touted cheaper version, the hinted at discless version.
Yeah.
I think Project Lockhart, that one was going to be called. That's the only real thing left to announce, and the price point and what games there are. And I think that's what they'll do at E3 or whatever.
But
they'll
fill that gap. When you get right down to it, the Series X is basically a PC.
Are you saying that because of its form factor, though?
No, I'm saying that because it's basically a PC.
Well, yes. There have been for a while, haven't there?
Yeah.
But this year, or whenever it's released, the form factor, we've all seen it. We all know what it looks like. It's like a PC tower or a one of those. I mean, apparently size wise, it's more like a Alexa or whatever, or Google Home or one of those things.
I seriously doubt that.
A bit bigger and blacker. Yeah, with a green streak.
I reckon it's a lot bigger, bigger.
I mean, that's fine. I think gaming is mature enough to have something of that. I mean, personally, I'm not bothered by its form factor at all.
The form factor is irrelevant.
I mean, you have this idea of mobile phones, I think, are the instigator behind it, how we have to have everything look really, really cool and swish. Even if it does the same thing, it has to look cool and fab. We're paying new money on new technology here. It's got to look the biz.
See, I one of the things that I don't understand is, when did green and black become the colour of gaming?
It hasn't. It's just the colour of Xbox. That's Xbox colour coding.
Well, it kind of is. When people see green and black, or mainly black with like a green streak or a green design or something like that, they automatically think, oh, that's something to do with gaming.
Okay, so it's either Tron or what was that called?
I think it was Razer. I think it's Razer's fault.
The Lawnmower Man. Lawnmower Man was so funny.
Lawnmower Man was
so bad.
Lawnmower Man was so bad, but also multicolored. I think it's Razer's fault. I think Razer.
Probably, yeah.
I think Razer had a lot
of. But it's fine. In some of the specs and some of the things that got announced for this is really, really exciting. I know it means nothing to me, who's a technological dunce, but.
I'm not, so tell me.
It's got next generation. I'll just read the sentence. A Navi-based GPU flanks the Zen 2 brains powered by AMD's latest wave RDNA graphics technologies.
RDNA?
It assembles a formidable SoC for next-generation gaming, clocking in at 12 teraflops, indicating its ability to process 12 trillion floating-point operations per second.
Okay.
In slapping a fan terms, which is what I just did there.
Yeah, Microsoft basically slap their meat on the table.
That is a machine that does 12 trillion operations per second.
Yeah.
That's going to open up a lot.
Now, my main question, and it's a question that I ask of pretty much every console that comes out new, right? Yeah. And I ask the same thing about graphics cards and video games that really want high-end graphics, because we must have much faster speed on these. Why?
Graphics isn't the same as 12 trillion. It's no, not, but they're not both related to each other.
My point is, why?
I wrote an article on the geekshow.co.uk, you can read it now, in which I said basically I think that this is the last generation where we're going to see graphics really exponentially improve. I think gaming this generation isn't going to be about, oh, look at those graphics. They're the graphiciest graphics I've ever seen. Yeah.
Yes.
That's how people talk. It's going to be about what's going on underneath the hood. It's going to be about gameplay systems. It's going to be about sort of world design and flora and fauna and what happens in the world around your character rather than, oh, look at those graphics. They're the swishiest swishes that I've ever seen. What's that mean?
The reason why I'm saying why is because as much as I would love to have...
And also ray tracing is going to be in this generation.
Yeah, but as much as I would love to have a video game world that is living and breathing in really interesting ways, right? As much as I would love to have that, I don't think the software technology is there for that.
Well, 7 years of development that it's got to cater for, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the hardware can be there, but in terms of the actual coding side of things, I don't think it's there yet.
Well, no, of course not, because the generation of consoles is always at its most potent at the end of it.
Yeah, and this is the thing. So I think that it's still not going to show what it really can do. See, here's the thing, right? I would love it if you could play a game like Horizon Zero Dawn or The Witcher or God of War or something like that, where... You know, in games you can have random beast encounters and random person encounters.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing if you had a game where you had NPCs who were basically actual characters in the game, not just NPCs. So every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Everything you do,
which
especially
it does have
to
that.
The NPCs. Now, thing well, is,
they're character NPCs rather than just
exactly. But
guy
I'm talking
walking
about
on the street. NPCs.
I'm talking about everyone.
Maybe. I mean, there's 7 years of development that it's got to cater to.
Yeah, but the thing is, in order to do that for every character in a game,
it'll have to be a limited size, because if that was like, I don't know, the Witcher's that size game or a Grand Theft Auto size game, it wouldn't be feasibly possible.
Yakuza game, how many NPCs are just there when you're walking around?
A few thousand, I'd say.
Exactly. Do you have the time or the ability? You would need a massively powerful AI to be able to compile just a random set of character traits and tropes and basically make them into an individual who could just be roaming the streets.
But you're running off into the sunset and pitching things again. So.
No, I'm not, because one of the reasons for having such a powerful machine would be to have a massively improved massively improved game AI.
Yeah. And I mean, apparently it's like bleeding edge graphics cards.
Yeah.
Which it'll have to be.
Yeah, it would be. But I mean, the thing that gets me most excited about the Microsoft Series X and what comes after that is the improvements to the video game AI, because there is nothing more
that,
fun.
That is what those 12 trillion calculations will be.
Exactly.
I suspect it'll be in AI.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but there is nothing more fun than playing against a person.
No, it's the unpredictability of it. You know when you're playing a person, you know when you're playing the computer.
Exactly.
It's the way it behaves is very different.
See, here's the thing, right? You remember the original Fear game? One of the reasons why Fear was so beloved when it came out was because the AI, they actually developed it so there was a degree of randomization in how the enemy soldiers reacted to what you were doing. And because of that random element, you know, they could attack you from unexpected avenues and actually flank you and stuff like that, which you didn't see in other games at the time.
I think the interesting aspect of this particular thing is it can be interpreted many different ways.
Yeah.
On one level, the 12 trillion calculations could be graphic enhancements, which it will be for a lot of games. On the other hand, it could be put into art style, art direction, which it will be. And it could also be put into AI, which it can be. It's completely, I mean, for the first time in video game history, that level of power, in video game console history, that level of power is just, it's giving a degree of freedom to developers which hasn't been there for eons, ever.
Let me pitch a scenario to you, right? Red Dead Redemption 3 or 4.
Doubt there'll be them, but hypothetically, let's just say there is.
Hypothetically, okay. Red Dead Redemption 3 or 4, yep. And you are playing a descendant of the main character from Red Dead Redemption or something like that, or maybe you're playing a totally new character, right? And you have a mission, right? You have to lead a posse to hunt down this criminal, right? And he's gone into the Badlands, but you don't know exactly where he is, right? Now, he's got his own crew of bandits. So you are basically chasing him, but you also don't know if he's laid an ambush. Now, if you can have his entire bandit crew actually acting like individuals or small teams or something like that and randomize that, and then have them give them the ability to ambush you at just completely random but perfectly logical ambush points, so then you aren't just being the hunter, you're also being hunted.
Yeah.
And then that adds a different level of tension to the game, because right now, that doesn't exist.
And also, the thing that bleeds into that is the high-spec SSD, because usually in a hypothetical situation like that, you know you're going to get ambushed because the screen goes black and it's a cutscene.
Yeah, that's
and
the point.
It kind of separates you from what is about to happen, because, all right, something's going to happen now. Whereas if it just happened, it will be much more immersive.
See,
and it will be much more immersive, because that's one of the things that they're talking about, sort of loading speeds.
A different scenario here. And this is a scenario that I think might catch a lot of people off guard.
Okay.
Right. There are various video games where you'll have a scene where you'll have a guy with a hostage going, let me go, I'm going to shoot him, let me go. Right.
Never do voiceover work. Go on.
Now, most people in that scenario would basically do the whole negotiation route, wouldn't they?
Mm-hmm.
But what if you also had the option to completely unexpectedly just go, bang, dead?
Okay.
without actually do it, without any reaction, without any foreshadowing or anything like that. That was one of your options because you had total freedom in the game.
Just to loop around, I think the level of detail that can come from that level of power in the machine will mean that games take longer to develop.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. That's going to be a byproduct.
But I actually think that's a good thing for mainstream games.
It is, yeah.
Because you're not going to be flooded. You have more time to actually develop the game, which means the game, maybe we can get back to the point where games actually get released finished.
I think also it'll see a rise of prominence for the indie game.
Yeah.
Because big games are more sporadic, so indie games will fill the gap. Other things that the Xbox Series X have been announced to have is, I don't know what they describe it as, a really boring technical language, but basically what it means is you can have multiple games saved in the hard drive, so you can start them up from where you left them, and that is true for multiple games.
Yeah.
Like a fast boot, so you don't have to go through the whole opening menu. It goes straight back into where you left it.
Yeah.
And that's multiple games, and that survives a reboot too.
Yeah, but I mean, that's basically what Netflix does with TV shows.
Yeah, but that's TV shows. That's very different.
Well, not really.
Video games are a bit more of a strain on a machine than...
Well, not really. Again, you're talking about...
You're totally taking the sting out of something which is like revolutionary and industry changing.
Netflix did it. Well, I'm sorry, but they did.
It's not the same, Rob.
It is, that's the point.
Okay, moving on. It's got like high quality, it's described it as ray tracing audio, which is basically when you've got headphones, the noises in the background react to whereabouts in the world they are. So if you've got headphones on and something's trying to flank you from the back left, the audio will sort of place itself there.
So 3D surround sound?
I guess, yeah. But it's not really been a common thing in mainstream gaming. It's been high spec.
No. I actually agree with you on that.
High spec personal PC builds will have that sort of thing. Not like a consumer grade machine.
No, I actually do agree. That is a massive step forward. I think that in terms of what its capabilities are and what it can do and what it heralds, I think it's an impressive piece of machinery.
And they're also doing some things that really benefit the consumer as well, like if you buy a game on the Xbox One, you don't need to upgrade it, you don't need to anything, you just put it in the machine and it works. I think there's going to be like a patch as well, sort of slightly zhuzh it up.
Yeah.
They're really looking at consumer, being very consumer friendly.
Yeah. The reason why I'm a little bit blasé about it.
Yeah, yeah, that's the right word.
Yeah, the reason why I'm a little bit blasé about it is because I keep up to date with stuff that's happening on the PC side of things in terms of PC technology.
Yeah,
and you know, some of the stuff that's happening there, I just keep thinking, yeah, wow, if only that could appear in a console.
Yeah, but there's mass consuming, mass production of things, isn't there?
Yeah,
there's a reason why properly high spec PCs cost in the thousands.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way that you're gonna get any of that stuff in a console. I know that that's the case, but still wishful thinking.
The thing is, interesting though, is the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One original iterations went much of a step up from the PlayStation 3 and 360.
See, the Xbox One X was a step up.
That's the Xbox One X, much more than the PlayStation 4 Pro.
Yeah.
If that was the original sort of preset of what those generations were, it would have been a much more impressive generation. But this past 7 years, technically it's not been great for our consoles.
See, this is the thing, I think...
And just on that, and this is the first time in a while where, maybe even ever, where console makers are actually putting properly game-changing things in, rather than just saying, oh, this one's faster and it's got better graphics and the same stuff.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I think that the ball is definitely in Sony's court now, and if Sony want to do something with the PlayStation 5, then, because they've known about what Microsoft are doing, and they already know what Nintendo are doing with the Switch.
Yeah, right. there's rumours of a Nintendo Switch Pro.
Yeah.
Just rumours, so who knows?
Well, they've got the Switch Lite already, so a Pro version. Yeah. I wouldn't I wouldn't reject those rumors because it would be an obvious step for Nintendo.
Yeah.
But with knowing what Microsoft are doing and already with the Switch out, but with that being the case, Sony have a great opportunity to basically say, right, we're just basically going completely this way. We're going to blast them all out the water, right?
Mm.
But have they done that?
No.
That's the big question.
I think cocky Sony is starting to return.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I think Microsoft are really going to rub sand in their faces.
Like this time last year, with the hints in the next generation, the assumption was, yeah, PlayStation 5 is going to absolutely destroy the next Xbox.
No.
But now, I think they're dallying and dillying and dallying and releasing things through Wired articles. And all we know about the PlayStation 5 at this point, on the 11th of March, is its controller has haptics rather than just a rumble function. It's vague some specs and its logo.
Yeah, but I mean, some vague specs.
Whereas, contrarily, we know a bit near enough everything on the Xbox Series X at least.
I would love to see a proper spec sheet for the PS5 because I think it'll be more of a monster than we think. But yeah. Is it enough of a monster to take on Microsoft?
I mean, they've got the games catalogue, but I think the problem is they're taking the position for granted a little bit too much.
Yeah.
How hungry the world is for any news on the PlayStation 5, and they're just saying no. They're not doing anything.
Yeah.
That annoys people.
It annoys people, but at the end of the day, it's hunger marketing, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't think it's working because there's a lot of angry people out there.
There's always a lot of angry people. Why do you think we're called the Impossible Mission?
Yeah, true. But I think I don't think it's going to be as cut and dry as Sony absolutely romps home. I think it's going to be much closer than they're giving themselves credit for.
Yeah.
Because it's not a case of all these people jump from 360 to PlayStation 4, so they're going to stay with PlayStation forever and ever. Jump once. Who say not going to jump again?
Yeah.
Consumers are fickle.
Yes,
and
they
I think
are.
Microsoft are really taking advantage of that right now. And on that note, I don't think really follow up anything there.
Nope.
So thanks for listening, stroke watching to Impossible Mission.
Unsure if your Spider-Man is amazing or spectacular? Infinitely confused by Crisis on Infinite Earths? Or does the mere thought of X-Men continuity make you tremble? Then 4Panel is the podcast for you. Join me, Andrew, and my co-host Robin Mick as we guide you through the weird and wild world of comics. We'll talk about the secret origins of your favourite characters, delve into the craziest events of comics past, and review the hottest new graphic novels that you might have missed. That's 4Panel, a part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, available wherever podcasts are found.
Hey, you're in like Flynn with Quentin Flynn here on the Geek Show. So glad to have you along. Keep it glued. Keep it glued? We don't even know what that means. Just stay here.
Join us on Cinema Eclectica as we dive headfirst into the latest cinema releases from blockbuster monsters to the newest indie darling fresh off the festival circuit. Also on the show, we have Off the Shelf, where we talk about the latest films to hit Blu-ray and streaming. That covers everything from the Shaw Brothers to silent cinema, Czech New Wave to slashers, and New Hollywood to honest to God trash. Check out Cinema Eclectica wherever you find your podcasts or direct from thegeekshow.co.uk.
Hello, my name is Rob, and welcome to another episode of Impossible Mission, the podcast stroke video series from the YouTube, which talks about all things video games, whether it's relevant or whether it isn't, and it just interests us. Either way, click on the like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, or if you are subscribing on a podcast provider, please do share us and rate us and just get involved with the discussion, really, is the fundamental thing there.
Yeah, because it is a discussion. I mean, we have our own opinions, but we want to hear what everyone else thinks as well on the stuff we're talking about.
Yes, slightly different recording for this episode for obvious reasons. The world is a little bit scary right now.
Yeah, if I see anybody grey-faced and groaning, I am going to be barricading myself.
Yes, the coronavirus has made it, social distancing is absolutely necessary, so we're just exhibiting that and recording this remotely.
like every other podcast is right now.
Well, all I can say is, you know, from my perspective, being a carer in my other role, I've been social distancing myself for 10 years already, so this is nothing new to me.
Okay. There's going to be two episodes in 1 week for this one.
Yes.
Because it's an important week as far as the consoles go. Last time out, we talked about the Xbox One.
Yep.
This time, the PlayStation 5 has had a big old dump of information.
Yeah.
First things first, did you watch the live stream of Mark Cerny going on a deep dive on the PlayStation 5's innards?
Unfortunately, I didn't manage to catch all of it.
I did watch it, but at the same time, I'm not sure I did watch it because it may have been the most boring thing I've ever seen in my life.
That kind of comes back to, remember we were talking about E3 and the whole point of E3 being, and I said, it's basically a trade show. It's a tech demonstration. That's all it is. Look what our console can do.
There's a degree of truth to what you're saying there, but at the same time, this was initially intended to be put out at Games Developers Conference. Its audience, this 52-minute video's audience was games developers.
Yeah, and from what I've read, because I've done a lot of reading about it, and from what I've read, it is going to be developer-friendly. I mean, they're not...
It's everybody really... else unfriendly, though.
Well, I don't know. See, this is the thing. If you're familiar with the PS4 architecture, because I think the problem child was the PS3 when they were trying to do something different, and with the PS4, they kind of went back to the drawing board and said, okay, we need to be more friendly to the developers, and they're kind of continuing with that with this new spec sheet they've put out.
Well, there's a aspect of the... Let's just call it an elaborate PowerPoint presentation because that's what Mark Cerny did. He has no stage appeal or sex appeal. He's very, very clever. He's a genius at designing these machines, in fact. But as far as doing that sort of delivery, it was bad. He reminded me of university when there was a lecturer. He did media ethics. I think it was like Thursday, 6 till 8 o'clock. And he didn't have a presentation. He didn't do anything. He just talked to us about media ethics for 2 hours.
Yeah.
I fell asleep through a few of those lectures, and I think he's pretty much cut from that cloth.
Yeah. Reminds me of my old paleontology lecturer when I was at uni. That was, I fell asleep in the lecture hall, and I snore really loud.
Yeah, I mean, when you wake up in a lecture and everybody's staring at you, you think, hang on, is this a dream? Am I naked? Are you all naked? What's going on?
But anyway, yes. Back to the PS5.
But the PS5 is what we're talking about today.
Yeah, I have heard about the, and I have read about the very dull presentation. I did see somebody mention, right, that if they really wanted to jazz up the presentation and actually make it more interesting, give it more character, what they should have done, regardless of how much cash it cost, hire Jeff Goldblum to do the presentation.
Well, that's just being hypothetical. Anyway, let's just go through the specs.
Yes.
The big bullet points. You mentioned in there the development of the PlayStation 4 was kind of going back to ground zero.
Yeah.
Or returning to origins, really.
Yeah.
There's a bit in the conference where he said PlayStation 1, I can't remember the exact figures, but PlayStation 1, it was 1 to 2 months to get... developers to get used to the coding for a PlayStation game. PlayStation 2, I think it was... it went up anyway. PlayStation 3, it was 6 months to a year for developers to get used to it. PlayStation 4, it was 1 to 2 months. And PlayStation 5 is under a month for people to be able to understand how to code or develop a game for it.
Yeah. Part of the reason for that is because there's several reasons why that's the case. I think if you're looking at the hardware specifications, one of the reasons for that is the... I think it's the custom processor and the GPU. That, combined with the SSD, makes it easier for developers to code.
Let's just go through... I mean, I'm not going to go through the CPU because, frankly, it's incredibly nerdy. But the thing which has been getting a lot of attention because, as ever with these things, it's a console war. The Xbox Series X has 12.1 teraflops.
Yeah, this one has 10.28, 10.28.
And there's a bit in the in the conference, let's just call it for shorthand, it's easier.
Yeah.
He said teraflops isn't the only way to measure the power of a console.
Yeah, he's right.
And given some of the accounts of developers who say basically this is one of the most revolutionary designs of a console maybe ever, I'm inclined to agree. However, that's not the way that these things are measured as a consumer-facing spot, is it?
Well, no. The way that things are measured as a consumer is price. How much does it cost?
No, I mean, which is the most powerful machine, I mean. Well, that is one of the, like, the real hardcore fanboys. Yeah, they really do fixate on that stuff.
Yeah, the real hardcore fanboys will focus on the teraflops. But, I mean, for the average consumer, I mean, the way I look at it is I treat consoles in the same way I treat PCs. First, I look at what processor does it have. Then I look at how much RAM it has. I don't even count teraflops. For me, teraflops don't even come into it. I'm looking at processor, RAM. I'm looking at what kind of graphical processor it's got. Those are the things I'm looking at. Teraflops don't mean anything to me. I don't care about the teraflops.
Oh, I know, but it's like the console war. It's whatever has more of something is the better one.
Yeah.
That's all I'm getting at.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that's a very, it's a very, very, very nerdy way of looking at it. But, I mean, if you look at, just to go over the specs.
Just on the graphics, I want to illustrate a point.
Yeah.
12.1 is more than 10.28.
Yes, it is.
Obviously. But if you go back to the PlayStation 1, the initial PlayStation 4, sorry, it was 1.84 teraflops.
Yeah, and it's a massive increase.
That's an insane jump up.
Yeah, but this is the thing. I mean, we know technology is going to be advancing in leaps and bounds. But the thing is, having a graphical processor, having a really good... I'm going to break it down in terms of a PC, right? Just having a really good graphics card doesn't mean to say you're going to be able to run high-end graphics on your games. Because if your processor and your RAM can't support the graphics processor, then, there's pointless having that high-end graphics card. It's a common mistake that a lot of people who try and build their own PCs make, because they think that having a good graphics card is what is, the be-all and end-all, and forget about all the other things.
This is one of those things where optimization really matters.
Yeah.
And the development of the SSD seems to be very much tailored around that, but we'll get to that later.
The interesting thing for me about the graphics processor is that it's a custom-made one. It's not an off-the-shelf one. It's not one that you can apply to other things. It's custom-made for the PS5.
Yeah. I want to run through a few bits of spec.
Yeah.
It's got 16 gig of RAM.
Which is not bad.
The PlayStation 4 was 8, so it's double. I know that's not really saying much, but...
I would envision if they that the 16 gig will be fine for now, but at some point they will push it to 32 or 64. If they do a pro version of the PS5...
I'd say 32. 64 is a bit much at this point in games development.
Yeah, but I would envision if they have a PS5 Pro, they would probably push that to 32 gig.
Yeah, I'd say that's quite comfortable. Memory bandwidth is 448 gigabytes, which is twice.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably more. I don't know. It's over twice the PlayStation 4.
Yeah. And the CPU, it's a Zen 2-based CPU. It's an 8-core CPU as well, so...
That means nothing to me, I'll be perfectly frank.
Well, an octa-core CPU seems to be the standard. With it being a Zen 2-based one, I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether that's a good decision to make with this. But then again, apparently it's supposed to be better than what you get in normal PCs. So
yeah, and the thing which is bugging me is the internal storage. It's 825 gig, and admittedly, the PlayStation 4 launched at 500.
Yeah,
but still, with games, some games being 50 gig, some games being 100 gig. That 825 gig is pretty bad.
Well,
but on that, they have announced that you can plug in a external drive.
Yeah, it actually has an NVMe slot, which I am very surprised that they've included that.
Well, it's basically like a memory. I mean, the way that Xbox Series X is doing it, it's like a Xbox Series X has a proprietary system, which means you have to buy their stuff to put in the machine. Which means they can charge a premium, which reminds me of the days, I think it was the PlayStation Vita, where you had to have their specific type of memory.
I was literally about to say exactly the same thing. It seems that Sony has learned from the mistake they made with the Vita, because if they hadn't done that with the Vita would have been a much bigger handheld console. It would have really challenged the 3DS in the handheld space, right?
Yeah.
But I think Sony have learned from that. So now you can just buy an off-the-shelf NVMe SSD card.
Well, it has to be a certain speed, but yeah.
Yeah, it has to be a certain speed, which isn't readily available now, but by the time the launch of the PS5 comes around, then they might actually be more readily available. And the fact that you can buy a third-party off-the-shelf one means that they're no longer being as kind of, holding onto it as tightly as they used to, which is, I think, a good thing for the consumer.
Yeah, so that's the specs.
I mean, you can still use external USB hard drives, which have your PlayStation 4 games on, to actually play them on the PlayStation 5, which, you know, the backwards compatibility kind of reminds me of, remember with the Xbox 360 and the Xbox One, the backwards compatibility for that they eventually came up with. If you had the game on the Xbox 360, you basically could get a code, which you could download the game onto the Xbox One without paying.
You haven't really described what the backwards compatibility looks like with the PlayStation 5. All they said is basically like a legacy mode that allows you to play PlayStation 4 games.
The way I understood it from everything I read was that if it's on a hard drive, then you should be able to play it as long as it's, you know, as long as it's like not a really early PlayStation 4 game. And
yeah, the top 100, they described it as, which asks the question, by playtime, he described it.
Yeah.
Top 100 PlayStation 4 games by playtime, which it's going to be a lot of multiplayer stuff, isn't it? If that's the barometer they're using to measure this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't mentioned anything about PlayStation 1, 2, or 3 games as well.
I think they should just be digital, frankly, like a digital library.
I think, a digital library. But if you already own, I think they could take a leaf out of Microsoft's book and say, okay, if you've already got this game on disc, right, then put it in and it'll generate a code and you can download it for free because you already own it, right? So I think that would be a nice way of acknowledging that people who already own a massive library of games don't need to pay through the nose to play those games on the PlayStation 5.
Yeah, there's some things I want to bring up here, though. The main one, though, is this is really bad marketing from Sony.
Yes.
Whereas look at the Xbox and it released like the console what it looked like first in a big bombastic nice trailer, and then it got all the nerdy stuff out of the way via articles, via bits and pieces after that. So there's something tangible there. There's something tangible that people who want an Xbox Series X can look forward to. They know what it looks like. They know what the console controller is. Whereas Sony have released a series of nerdy articles, and that's it.
Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but you know, at the end of the day, Microsoft have basically taken the lead on the marketing with this round of console announcements, and when they've already released what it's going to look like and also released a spec sheet for it, you're not really playing for anything then.
No, but at the same time, Xbox are in a position now where all they need to do is start releasing trailers for games and the price and release date.
Yeah, whereas Sony aren't even in that position yet. I don't think a design for the PS5 has been finalised yet.
And honestly, I think when we were talking about sort of the sound thing, where they were figuring out what works, they were figuring out what hard drives are compatible, it doesn't sound like they're completely finished much. Well, they finished a lot, but
this is my point. I think that it's a lot more finished than people think, but it's still an incomplete product. And you mentioned the sound, and I do want to talk about the sound because the sound bit was really interesting. From a lot of the articles I read that focused on the audio side of things, the Tempest 3D audio technology that they've developed for this, it sounds pretty damn amazing, and it could potentially, if it's applied properly, it could revolutionize the whole aspect of VR gaming. Because if the PSVR can support like 50 pretty decent sound sources, right, in one go, then from what I've read, the Tempest engine can support hundreds. And not only can it support hundreds, it can do them with just a normal set of headphones.
Yeah, that is very good.
And that's that, I think, is the key thing. You don't need to buy... I mean, obviously, you'd need to buy an upgraded PSVR for the PS5, but...
Well, they've not announced that yet, but they will.
But you wouldn't need to buy a really high-end set of headphones to basically use, you know, experience the audio side of things. Now, part of any game, part of any experience with video games is the sound, especially when you're playing horror games or something like that.
Any games, let's be fair, and that's not pigeonhole it to just horror.
But I mean, horror games in particular, because of the atmosphere that comes with the audio side of things. But any game, as you said, right? Now, imagine, because we've always said that one of the problems with the virtual reality games is that they're not as immersive as we want them to be.
Well, there's more problems than that, but...
Yeah, there's more problems than that. But that's one of the main problems. They're not as immersive as we want them to be. Now, you imagine, instead of having like 50 audio sources, you have literally hundreds, and you're being bombarded with all sorts of subtle noises and sounds from all sides, right? That's going to play a big part in your immersion into any game.
And that's fair, but as far as I'm concerned with this, something's only as good as its worst example.
Yeah, so that's absolutely right. I mean, I'm not trying to... See, the thing is, I'm trying to play devil's advocate a little bit with Sony, because I know that they haven't really done a good job with their presentation of this. And so, I'm hopeful that it's going to be an interesting console. I'm hopeful that... I mean, the backwards compatibility, I think, is a big thing.
Yes.
But I don't think it's the thing that's going to sell the console.
No, it's always the games, isn't it?
Yeah. And Ghost of Tsushima is one of the launch titles for the game. For the console.
No, it's on PS4. I've got to be honest, my worry with Ghost of Tsushima is it's going to be another Souls-like game.
Yeah.
Which for a lot of people is fine, but at the same time, there's just as many people who don't like that as people who do.
Yeah. They have announced that there are other launch titles for it, but
like,
not a lot.
As far as I know, there's like, well, Godfall is... PS5 title, and I think World Rally Championship 9 is a PlayStation 5 title.
Yeah, which, you know, I wouldn't say that was a great lineup. The biggest... No. See, the thing is, one of the biggest factors that's going to drive the sales of the PlayStation 5, in fact, of any console, for the average consumer, is how much does it cost?
Yeah, and people are basically... deciding, like press people, industry people are basically deciding that it's probably going to be $600 or £600.
No, I've seen $500. $500 is the maximum I've seen from a lot of the articles.
I've seen $600 quite a lot, but
a lot of the articles I've seen have said $500, but that's based on no interruptions to production, right? No real issues, anything like that. But given the state of the world right now,
I think RRP is going to be £500, but I think both are going to be subject to problems. Remember the Wii, where it was almost impossible to get for about 6 months?
Yeah.
I think they're going to both have that problem.
Yeah, it's the age-old thing as well. Don't buy a console for the first 6 months.
Well, yes, but at the same time, I think other things are causing that to be just... normal. It's going to be very, 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 very hard.
No, I'm just saying that for the first 6 months of any console, it's going to run into all sorts of bugs and problems and stuff like that, stuff that they didn't envision, because at the end of the day, they don't do exhaustive testing. They can't. It wouldn't be cost-efficient for any console manufacturer to do exhaustive testing. So,
well, they can test.
They're not going to have somebody doing like a 72-hour gaming session on the console, are they?
They can test, but they can't test in a way that thousands or millions of people owning a console in their homes can test.
Exactly. I mean, remember when the Xbox 360 came out, and all of a sudden, within the first 6 months, there were red rings of death everywhere.
Yeah.
Any console launch is going to have issues like that. I was surprised with the PlayStation 4 that it didn't have as many issues as I thought it was going to have.
No, I mean, I didn't have to replace my PlayStation 4 at all. Although, admittedly, the controller is as good as useless now. I have to basically recharge it every day.
Yeah. I think the biggest problems facing both Sony and Microsoft with the launch of these consoles regardless of what the games, what the launch titles are, and regardless of how much it costs, they're up against a console that is literally kicking their asses right now.
Yeah, but the thing is, at this point, we'll revisit the consoles later when there's more to talk about, when it's like software rather than hardware. But in step one of next gen watch of what these consoles are or what they're going to be, how are you feeling about the tech, about PlayStation and Xbox Series X? How do you think the both land? How do you think the land lies?
Well, I think that Xbox, I think Microsoft have on paper the more powerful console, right? I think on paper Microsoft do have the more powerful console, but I think in terms of actually developing games for the console, I think Sony have the advantage on that front. I think developers, because Sony are basically, with the PS5, they're basically just building on the PlayStation 4. They're not going back to the drawing board and re-envisioning things. And it's kind of similar with Microsoft, except with it being much more high-end specifications and things like that, there's going to be a bit more pressure on the developers. But the actual, I think the actual turnaround for games, you've said, is 1 to 2 months on the PlayStation 5. That's what they envision.
Understanding the code, it's under a month for PlayStation 5.
Yeah. Understanding the code for the Series X.
I doubt they're going to release that information. It was just a bullet point to make it sound cool for PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
Prior to that, that's not the sort of information that was public knowledge.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm just going on the basis of the tech specifications, because the Series X is basically a PC, right?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what the form factor is going to be like for PlayStation 5.
Yeah, but the Series X is basically a PC, but it's also a proprietary operating system, which means it isn't a PC.
I'll be honest, I know they haven't released the form factor for the PlayStation 5. I think they're going to have to follow suit, because of how powerful these things and how much heat they're going to kick off.
Yeah.
I don't think you can have it as sort of like, because they are sort of, all these consoles basically form, like form factor wise, go all the way back to sort of the Betamax player and the VHS player.
Yeah.
And I don't think it could continue that sort of idea of having the that sort of device under the TV. I think it has to evolve into a bigger, different form factor. And I think Xbox will be the leader on that. And I think the PlayStation 5 will have to follow suit. I think it might come into problems if it's just another like DVD player under the TV sort of design.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. See, the only way that Sony could make the DVD player type design or the VHS player type design work in terms of the heat dissipation, I think, would be if they used a really good liquid cooling system, right?
Yeah, but I still think that's going to rise the costs, isn't it?
Yeah, that's going to drive the cost up. If they're planning on using just fans and thermal pads and things like that, and just normal heat dissipation there to keep the cost down, then they're going to have to build it so that it's well ventilated,
which means tower sort of design.
Exactly. And if they're building it as a tower, then you remember ages ago I said, right, there's going to come a time when they're all just basically PCs.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it's probably going to be the next console generation. I said this last year, I think it was.
Yeah.
Before any announcement. They basically have to follow. I said PCs are basically one, and the next consoles are basically going to be PCs. And if Sony do adopt the tower form factor, then I'm basically right, aren't I? I called it.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be interesting, you know. I mean, it's a natural evolution of an industry.
Yeah, but I'm going to make this prediction now, right? I'm just throwing this out there. Another off the top of my head, crazy Rob prediction. You know, I'll basically be like the soothsayer in the Monty Python movie, going sooth, sooth.
Okay, soothsayer.
I predict that if there is another console generation, and I'm not sure if there is going to be, right?
If there is, they're not going to be the same sort of format as they are now. It's going to be much more digital leaning.
Yeah, I reckon that if there is another console generation, and it's a big if, right? If there is another console generation, it will basically just be Nintendo. Microsoft and Sony will basically stop making consoles and everything will be PC based.
Man, I wouldn't say PC based, everything will be streaming based.
Well, streaming based, PC based, but it will all run on your home computer. You won't need a console anymore. It'll all be digital, as you said, right? So you'll have like a Netflix of games or something like that. But what you'll have, see, it'll be like Netflix and Amazon Prime. On one side, you'll have Microsoft with their game exclusives. On the other side, you'll have Sony with their game exclusives, right? And everything will be software-based. So who's got the better software?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say where I lie in your prediction because it's your prediction, and that's fine. But, yes, I think we covered everything that we possibly could cover at this stage in the announcement phase of the next generation of consoles. So if you have anything to add, you think we're talking nonsense, or you agree and you want to elaborate or talk about it further, do comment below, or if you were listening on a podcast, tweet us at @TGS_TheGeekShow, Instagram us at @TGS_TheGeekShow, or Facebook us at @TGS.TheGeekShow. We couldn't have uniformity there. But until next time, when we are talking about games that we'd like to see return in the next generation, we've already recorded that one, and some pretty wild suggestions and some interesting things that we'd like to see return, one of which we actually talked about before the story started leaking. So we were there first, even though our timeline might not suggest it.
Yes.
Until then, thank you very much for watching and or listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.